This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Have that dump button ready, because I honestly have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth.
Get ready for takeoff.
There is no way that I'm tapping out now.
You're listening to Unkillable.
If you didn't kill us last night, we are unkillable.
Hosted by Brandon Tierney.
I was getting a little worried there. I thought the Jets might actually win this game, which at this point, I don't know how you possibly root for that. All right, everybody. Welcome to Unkillable, episode number 11. Wow. And of the 11, I think 10 have been negative, or 10 have been smothered and dripping in disgust. I'm not really disgusted today. I'm actually laughing. I mean, listen, man, the sequence that they in the fourth quarter, there's about a 7 or 8 play sequence encompassing the back end of a Jets drive and an entire Seattle drive. Now, this is saying something. Just let this resonate for a moment. I've never seen anything like this in my life. I honestly think that that was the worst 5 or 6 minutes in the history of the Jets. I mean, really, they are. Now, it works out okay because, again, I didn't want the Jets to win. Maybe you did, and we can talk about that as we start hitting the comments here. But I think most of you are with me. So the Jets are at their own 38. It's 1st and 10. Adams, P.I., negates a 38-yard reception. It was the right call. Nice to see Aaron Rodgers finally chuck it down the field. Clearly, you know, Adams disengaging. You have to throw the flag there. They do. Okay. Then there's the delay of game penalty. What a stunner. The Jets, from an operational perspective, simply don't know what to do, including the once great Aaron Rodgers. There's another hanky, 5 yards. Boom. So it's suddenly 1st and 25. All right, 1st and 25. Keep in mind, they're winning at this point. They eventually punt after a bunch of nothing. And this is where it gets absolutely amazing. I mean, I'll bypass the benign plays here. It is 4th and 6, and the Jets have 12 players on the field. Do you even practice? I mean, I'm not even going to really rant and rave today, but do you even practice? I mean, it is just, it's so embarrassing, my God. So, instead of now, they have no punter and Myers doesn't really kick deep. So the Jets are, if you want them to win again, are they're up. They've got Seattle, you know, 4th and 6. What do they do? Well, the Jets help them out. There's the 5-yard penalty. It's 4th and 1. Then you get a little PI on the Jets. Boom, 1st down. Then you get these couple of gems in a row. Basically, 4th and 1. They stuff the run. You get a horse collar from Solomon Thomas. Here's the penalty. 15 yards. Seattle, 1st down. All right. And then you get, wow. Then you get 3rd and 6, and there's a fumble. Of course, the Jets recover. Of course, they reverse it. It's incomplete. And that was the right call. I mean, as soon as you saw the replay, I actually thought in real time, I'm like, there's no way that's going to be a fumble. But when you saw the replay, Geno's arm clearly going forward. And then this is the kicker. Will McDonald on 3rd and 6, Will McDonald on neutral zone in front. Will McDonald played well today, a couple of the sacks. By the way, how about that? Will McDonald, who was on fire for the start of this season, goes basically from week 7 until today without a sack. And then he started showing up and he looked really good, but he gets that neutral zone and then Charbonnet runs it in for the touchdown. So let me get this straight. 12 men on the field, couple of pass interferences, one on the Jets offense, one on the Jets defense, a horse collar, a neutral zone infraction. Wow. I mean, remember the what was his name? What was his first name? Freddie McGriff used to endorse it. It was the not Hemansky or something like that. There was an old DVD probably in the early 90s where, and Fred McGriff, he would point at you. It was basically a video on how to play baseball. Well, listen, the Jets can save everybody the problem, you know, the trouble of looking for the antithesis of that. Just burn this on a CD. We're obviously past the VHS stage and put it out there and show everybody what not to do. You know, it is interesting though. And I really couldn't decipher. I'd love to hear from a few of you guys if you're on the way home from the game. The crowd. Now, I couldn't tell. I'm like, wait, are they cheering for Seattle? Which, I mean, we've heard that before. When the Jets are out of it, and they've been out of it for a while, the opposing fans infiltrate the stadium, take over. And it sounds like basically like a Jets road game. The difference, though, those games are usually, you know, the Dolphins back in the day, or even the Dolphins last year on Black Friday. Historically, the Bills or the Patriots or if the Cowboys roll in or the Steelers or the Niners, teams with national profiles. And, you know, not the Seahawks or the Jaguars, but did 15 or 20,000 people really travel from the Pacific Northwest? I don't think so. And I don't think that there's that many Seattle fans in the greater tri-state area. So I'm sitting there, I'm trying to decipher. I'm like, are they cheering for them or are they just cheering when things are going wrong for the Jets because they want the Jets to lose? Who knows? I don't have any idea what the hell's going on. You know where I stand. That's it. You know, the Rodgers ship has, it has sunk. You know, there was a couple of times today where he showed a little bounce where he's able to free himself up and extend the play. And we start to see that, you know, last week or two, a little bit, not to overstate it, but it's just amazing. Like I'm sitting there, the Jets come out, and there was a point, and I got in from the airport. I flew in from out of state, celebrated my, obviously, Thanksgiving and my in-laws' 50th wedding anniversary. So I didn't get in until right around, I landed when the game started, but I actually got in to my house, I don't know, whatever, 1:40 or so. And so I'm buzzing through the game. I'm zapping through the game. And just to catch up and be ready to do this. And then, start taking my notes, which I don't know why I even take notes, because you could probably just go to the last page and skip everything and say, the end, Jets find a way to lose creatively yet again. But I'm like, you know, this is actually, in a lot of ways, very fitting of the Jets, because Seattle's giving them the game. I mean, it almost looked at one point as if Seattle was on acid. That is how discombobulated they were. I mean, fumbling punts, fumbling kickoffs, tripping all over themselves. Absolute lunacy. And the Jets jump up, and I'm like, perfect. You know, here we go. This is really the first game, just based on the math, the first game where I did not want the Jets to win. And I'm flashing back to whether it's the Cardinals game where they were just utterly inept, or the second Patriots game, or the Colts game, or basically all the other games that were sitting there begging for them to win to extend the season. And of course they don't. And it really seemed like today they were going to do what we didn't want them to do. So I guess that's the silver lining here. They didn't win, you know, and at this point, I don't know how anybody at all is rooting for wins. I don't know. Now it's like, it's one thing. Again, there's a fine line here for sure. I'm not saying that you know, on yesterday or 2 days ago, you get on Amazon, you get a $10 Seattle Seahawks shirt and you wear that, you know, in your house, or when Seattle scores, you actually stand up and visibly cheer and celebrate. I don't mean that. There's got to be a mental line of demarcation where you're no longer invested in the outcome of the Jets in terms of a positive day. You just latch on to and gravitate to what is going to ultimately be best for the team, and that's to lose. And the crazy thing is, you know, it, and I get it. Some people push back on this, not that many. I think many of you know, when you've had 9 straight losing seasons, and I guess this is going to be year 15 straight years without the playoffs, 15 years without a playoff appearance, which, by the way, is the longest drought in North American team sports. Congratulations, Jets. You haven't won the Super Bowl in our lifetime, at least in my lifetime, and there's a good chance you probably never will. But, man, when you're bad at something, you are so bad that you own a record that nobody wants. So at least the depths of which they can sink is impressive. Like, it truly is impressive. My God almighty, multiple pass interferences, 12 men on the field. That to me, like, I can understand. I could go through these penalties, right? And I ran through the situations, but just a quick reaction to each one. Like, all right, pass interference, Devontae going to make a play. You know, he wants to show out. He's a little desperate. I get it. You get a little handsy, clearly a penalty. All right, at least that's an effort penalty. The horse collar, you know, bodies are moving and flying and ducking and bending. You go here, and then suddenly the body's here, and you get the back of the pads, back of the jersey. They're going to get that every time. That's been a point of emphasis for a while. All right, I can even understand that because it's an effort mistake. Now, to be fair, good teams don't do that when the game is in the balance, but at least it's born out of, you know, attempting to do something well with spirit. The 12 men on the field and a neutral zone infraction. The neutral zone infraction is the dumbest fucking penalty that you could possibly commit. I don't understand how you can't just look and understand where you are. It's called, you ready, guys? It's called spatial awareness. It's not even IQ. It doesn't take intelligence to line up in the right spot. It just takes really two eyes. And if God blessed you with two eyes, use them. I mean, it was basically helmet to helmet. What in the world are you doing? Like, I understand, you know, Breece Hall, and he has just not had a good year. Six fumbles, six drops. It's been an absolute mess. But, you know, you're trying to make something happen. This goes along the lines of the Devontae Adams PI. You know, effort plays and mistakes born out of aggression or desperation. Not that you want to see it, but, man, you can understand it, right? On some level, you can understand it. I just don't understand. I just don't understand how you don't know where to line up. It is absolutely amazing. It is amazing. It would be like, I've talked about this from time to time. I do a lot of coaching, right? And I coach one of my son's team. I coach my daughter as well in softball and basketball. And my son's team, he's 9, everybody else 10 or 11, whatever. So they're still very young. And that would be like me telling our right fielder I'm going back to 7U years ago, you know, because generally the kids start out in the outfield. The kids who are out there don't really know what's going on yet. And then you got to coach them up and they've got to put the work in. And a lot of my kids have, which is great, but that's like a kid who is 7, all right, standing, and he's playing right field. And instead of being in right field, he's standing in foul territory. And I go up to the kid and I say, hey, yo, Joe or Jimmy or Mikey or Timmy or whatever, Ralph, hey, we got to stand. Now, this is all the dress before the first game, so that this wouldn't happen. And this is an extreme example. But it's just knowing where to go. It's knowing where to stand. It's knowing what to do. Oh, my God. Again, you know, so we just root for losses now. That's where we're at. That's where we're at, Big Evan. Let me get my guy Evan in here. He is resilient like the rest of us. He is pouring comments. We will read a few in a bit. How in the world do you go into that building tomorrow and look your boys in the eyes when you just didn't stand in the right place? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, and along with all the freaking time management stuff, too, like not taking a timeout after the third down sack and all this
stuff.
It's like it shows that if they even considered Ulbrich in the first place, it's like if your sole purpose is looking for a guy that's not going to be an offensive play caller and not going to be a defensive play caller and is just going to be focused on the clock, this guy can't do that. So you can't
consider it
at all.
I'll tell you. And then, you know, again, I see this, you know, I really didn't tweet much over the weekend. Wanted to unplug a little bit. And I scrolled through a little bit, see if anything's happening with Juan Soto. Obviously checking in on the Knicks from a distance, whatever. And, you know, what do I see? More tweets from Woody. all black on Sunday, you know, bring the noise, as I paraphrase. Just, I don't know who the hell's running this man's account, because it can't possibly be Woody. Because really, and I mean this sincerely, like, I'm not trying to attack the low hanging fruit and be disrespectful and just, you know, just attack somebody. It's never personal, really. But if you're that dumb that you think that those type of tweets are going to minimize our level of distaste and disgust for this moribund franchise, then you really are dumb. And I don't think that you're dumb, Woody. I don't think that you're dumb. I don't think that you know football at all. But I don't think you're a dumb man, you know? And here, you know, the uniforms and, you know, make MetLife rock. MetLife sucks, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. You know what's crazy about this, Ev? The way this year started, right, and I ran through this on a few of the earlier pods, like when the schedule first came out, you know, most years you kind of, you're like, all right, how tough is the first month? Do we have a chance to get maybe two wins by February, October, just to hang around? When this schedule came out, I'm like, all right, there are wins galore. Now, granted, you didn't think the Vikings would be that good with Darnold. All right, you know, things do change year. It's not like the NBA. The NFL is truly year to year. The Chiefs, even though they have a lot of wins, they don't look the same. I mean, people were out on the Eagles. Now the Eagles haven't lost since September. I mean, all the different stuff. People thought the Patriots wouldn't win a game. They're probably going to win more than the Jets. I mean, I could just go myriad story, you know, bounce around and tell you how really unpredictable it is. But that's not the point. The point is that, you know, you look, when I looked at the schedule, I'm sitting there saying, all right, this is the year for so many reasons. Like, Rodgers is healthy. The football gods owe us one. You know, we're back. We've got some offensive line reinforcements. And I really thought, and it happened. Now, in hindsight, I wish it didn't, because they choked away a draft pick. I really thought, if you go back and you find some of the old conversations me and Sal had on The Fan about Devontae Adams over the summer, I always thought that he was coming. So I'm thinking Devontae, Garrett, Breesall, Tyron Smith, you know, the Vera Tucker healthy and back, and this and that. And then the schedule, just to bring it full loop, I'm like, they're going to be, what, 6-2, 7-2? Like, I was, yeah, I guess that's my bad. That's cardinal mistake, cardinal sin. I was bagging wins before the season even started. But, you know, just looking at the schedule optically, I'm like, man, everything is set up, and here we are, another miserable season. And, you know, I don't want to say I don't know where to go, because that's what I do on the pod. I tell you where to go. And we've had the conversations about Saleh before he was fired, and about Douglas before he was fired, and about who they should pursue, both from a GM and a head coach position. But good God, I really, all of our investment emotionally now is in the draft. I don't love either quarterback, the top two quarter. I don't love them. Yeah. I don't know if they'll absolutely be in a position to even draft them. And even if they are, is it the right choice? It's like, does the new coach want to roll it back once with Rodgers? It's not good, buddy. It's not good.
And it just feels like today's broadcast, and also kind of just like the aura around the game, it felt like it was more of like what we've been doing, where it's like, oh, Rex Ryan might come back. And then you have Mark Sanchez on the call.
Yeah.
We're facing Leonard Williams and Geno Smith on both sides of the ball. They both have pretty solid games.
That's a good point.
It's like everything is like, hey, here was the Jets pass. Look how great they are once they leave, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's the exact opposite. Like, I call the Jets the legend killer. Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Ronnie Lott back in the day, and a few others, right? Like, the Jets even had Art Monk. I mean, if you're, you know, I know you probably know the name, really, really great receiver from Washington back in the day, even bounced with the Jets for a year or so. And like, they're so good. The Jets lead the universe in getting players who are finished. And thinking Casillas, who was on the Cowboys years ago, and they bring him in. He had nothing left on the D-line. It's just utterly amazing how inept they are. And it's confounding, because I think it would be, you know, less problematic if it was just one reign, like one lengthy reign where for some reason you had, like, kind of like the Giants, even though they've actually had volatility from a coaching perspective the last couple of years too. So maybe that's not the best example, but where there was a longer run, right? And for whatever reason, there was just great reluctance by the owner to pull the plug on, you know, said GM and said coach. But you just knew, like, all right, up until that point, it was good. And then maybe when we get rid of them, it'll be good again. There's been so many different failed iterations of the New York Jets that it really is. It's almost impossible to believe how many men have failed in every position for this putrid franchise. It's mind numbing. It makes you mind mush is what it does, man. It mushes the brain. They are the brain mushers. You know, BRAI. Forget about the Jets chant. We're going to start chanting brain mushers because they turn, like, I couldn't even construct a sentence. They turn your brain into mush, football mush. They challenge your greatest football sensibility. Like, you know that they shouldn't do something, but then you're like, well, maybe you twist yourself into a knot and you almost convince yourself, well, yeah, maybe it's going to work this time. And it's just, it's absolute craziness. Craziness. I got a question for you.
Yep.
Did you want to win this game? When Seattle was tripping all over themselves with special teams, did you want to win this? Where were you emotionally?
It's similar. Like, I heard something you just said recently about how, like, crazy it's, like, the year that we choose to suck the most is when the draft is the most shitty, kind of at the top.
Yeah.
You know, like last year, and it's like, granted, you know, some of them haven't worked out so far, but it's like last year there was a bunch of players where I was like, ooh, this guy could be intriguing. Whereas this year it's like you suck the most in a draft that's really like three players, it feels like, or maybe four, and two of them are wide receivers that you don't need, you know?
Yep.
So it's like I wasn't like rooting for a tank necessarily, but at the same time, it was just like I'd like to win one because it was like, oh, you know, maybe we'll show something and just show some life. But then it was just like once it started going down the other way, I was just like, oh my God, we got this guy that can't do anything. Their kicker can't make a kick. Their punter's like practically has his leg chopped off.
Come on, dude, suck it up. You got to just prance out there and punt the ball. Suck it up, man. Nobody even hits you, dude. What are you doing?
The thing that drives me most insane is how Adam Amin, though, every time the Jets were getting close and Rodgers coming down the field, he'd be like, oh, the Jets can save their season. I'm like, how many weeks are we going to act like they still got a shot? Like, they're done. What are we doing anymore?
I know. And they don't even put us in the hunt anymore. Like, it's the, you know, the seven teams that are in and in the hunt. And basically, they throw everybody a bone just to give the fan bases an ounce of inspiration so they keep watching the games, basically. Yeah. And the NFL could just keep printing money. And they don't even throw us up in the hunt anymore. You know what? Now there's a separate column. It's called the shit stack. So there's the playoff teams in the hunt, and then there's the shit stack. And that's where we are. We're in the shit stack.
Yeah, and it's like now I'm seeing these articles of like, oh, ranking the top, you know, head coaching position openings, and the Jets are, of course, at the bottom. I'm like, oh.
I know. Man. Oh, you know, that's actually a very interesting point because, you know, we sit here and we process our own issues, but there's going to be a lot of openings out there, many of which, if not all, are going to be more desirable than the Jets, whether it's a cap thing, whether it's an ownership thing, which is primarily the main, I would think, deterrent to anybody that's got an ounce of attractiveness to them from the GM or the head coach spot. Nobody's coming here that we want to come here. That's not going to happen. We know Belichick's not going to take the call. I don't think that they'll, you know, Vrabel's going to be like, are you kidding me? Oh, so the names that we are interested in will not be there. And we'll have to sit through, and I just tapped the brakes on this. I'm not having it. But I'll let other people's do the dance, the Rex dance, the Mangini dance. You know, so I'm at the point, too, though, where as much as I want to get that franchise quarterback, I really do think, and maybe I'm emboldened by the Vikings' success this year and a few other teams with bridge quarterbacks. Yeah. Now, it's not the sexiest story. It's not going to get you 12, 13 wins in a bye or a home field playoff game in all probability. But the right with the right coach and the right system and the right bridge quarterback, I really think the more I think about this, the right move might be to trade down and just add to the asset bank. I've said a few times on the pod, I know he got beat by Metcalf once. He made a nice play on Metcalf in the end zone, soft Gardner. But I would be open to trading him because now I think the most undesirable situation, this is what the Jets are staring at. They've got a few big names who are due a lot of money, and you don't have a quarterback. So, you know, that line where it's all equal, where, all right, whether the finances add up and the personnel adds up and everything is really just got to hum it at the same speed. The Jets are fractured all over the map, whether it's the money, whether it's the old quarterback, whether it's a couple of guys who you like but don't know if you love them to pay them the big money, like Gardner. We got to keep Garrett. Garrett's a beast. I'm not worried about him. Maybe even Breece Hall. I mean, you going to really give Breece a bag for a running back? I mean, the dime a dozen. Why would the Jets, and I know why Jets and some of the Jet fans will do this, right? Oh, my God, how are you going to let Breece Hall go? He's like one of the only good players, but that's not wrong, even though he's dropped six passes and fumbled six times, as I said. I look at it totally differently. If I can lose with you, then I can lose without you, and I can reset my finances. So I just think, Evan, it comes down to if somebody, by the grace of the football gods, that actually knows what the hell they're doing, and he looks at this roster, he's like, all right, don't want Rodgers, he's cooked. I'm ready to trade Gardner. I could let Breece Hall walk for the right deal and just collect 3, 4, 5 more picks. They've given up draft choices for Rodgers. They gave up a draft pick for Davante Adams, not a fifth rounder, a third rounder. I mean, that's prime equity, man. That is a player that if you draft the right guy is going to be with your team for 7, 8 years and you get him on the cheap. So it's just nothing's congruent. Everything is jaded and everything's all out of whack, which makes it, I don't want to say impossible. I'll never say that, because if it was impossible, then what are we doing the Unkillable Pod for? That's the whole essence of what we do. It's not impossible, but holy God, do they make it nearly impossible to think that they've got a chance to ever get this thing right. It's insane.
And the other thing about Breece is the running back market seems to be headed toward like going back up again, because you got what? Derrick Henry got paid and is doing pretty well. Saquon got paid and is doing pretty well. Josh Jacobs got paid and is doing pretty well.
Yeah.
James Conner just got extended, you know, is doing pretty well. So it's like you got a lot of these guys that are starting to get paid. And I know the Giants fans might be like, oh, you know, we should have paid Saquon. But I feel like you look at the Giants right now and you're like, if Saquon came back, would they really be that much better? Like,
no,
the supporting cast around the Eagles made him 10 times the player that he was on the Giants, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, those calls have kind of stopped coming into the fan. There was a little bit of an early for sure. I think most sensible football and Giant fans have been beaten down, you know, certainly the last 10 years outside of 2022. You know, we're actually like 14 or 15 years for the Jets, but Giants' ride has been very dark as well. Difference is they've got every generation has a championship to gravitate to and to, you know, fondly remember and say, oh, yeah, it wasn't that long ago. And that is a big difference because it keeps your spirit high when things appear they're bleakest. But no, I think that most sensible Giant fans understand, like, hey, listen, I'm going to forget about Giant fans and I'll finish that in a moment. But Josh Jacobs still on the Raiders. Are the Raiders suddenly a tenant? No, it's all about the infrastructure. And it's all about having guys around you. Now, when you have an electric talent like Saquon, you know, all right, maybe you squeeze out a win or two more, but it's not changing the bottom line. It's going to make you more watchable. But the mission isn't to be able to watch these teams. The objective is to watch these teams and eventually watch them win. You know?
Yeah.
What are the people saying? Hit me up. Give me a couple.
Yeah, so we got Clint Cantor said, when they were up 21-7, I went, 'tis the season for generosity. How are we going to give this one away? I thought that was a pretty good, you know, head towards.
Pretty witty.
A little.
Yeah, wait, listen, Jet fans are very good at, you know, the witty tweets and the alliteration and everything. Anything that just could kind of, you know, highlights our ineptitude. We could at least show our creative side. So, Clint, good job, buddy. Nicely done.
There you go. And then, of course, there was one guy who asked a similar question that I asked a couple weeks ago, talking about building blocks. They said, like, do we have anybody moving forward on this team where it's like whoever comes in, like, he's untouchable? You know, like, that's like a big buzzword in, like, MLB and all these other sports with the untouchable stuff. So it's like, is he truly untouchable? So I was thinking, like, you know, when you were breaking down, obviously, the top three draft picks, you know, the three guys, you know, obviously Hall, Wilson, and Gardner. I was like thinking, like, you know, who do you think would be the other pieces there?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't even start with them. And, you know, I want to see more from the young man, but because he's a rookie and he's got some more time to put some things on tape and he's been He's been pretty interesting so far. Olu Fashanu is somebody that, you know, you're coming like, all right, at least in theory, I've got a left tackle. I've got a building block there. And by the way, as much as we talk about the bigger three names, Wilson, Soft, Gardner, and Breece Hall, yeah, Elijah Vera Tucker's on that list. He's got to get paid too. How do you justify paying Elijah Vera Tucker? And I think he could have been, borderline great with his versatility. But, you know, 2 years in a row, season-ending injuries. This year, nicked up again, even though, you know, he's gotten in and out of the lineup. So, no, I mean, I would let him walk. Well, at the very least, I wouldn't pay him. I think that you come into this situation, and I don't think you can be married to anybody. I really don't. That's why, like, Rex scares me. I mean, first, I don't think Rex is a very good coach, and I've chronicled that, and I love him. And he was really good for a couple of years, and it was fun. It was a fun ride, and he gave us a jolt of respect that no Jet coach has ever given me in my lifetime. And I'll always cherish that. It was really a lot of fun. But I like, if somebody like Rex comes in, or even somebody like John Gruden, don't you think, just given their age and the situations, that they're going to probably view Rodgers as more of a yes than a no? Don't you think? Probably, yeah. Right?
Yep. Yep.
I mean, and if they don't, now I'd be more okay with this with John, but what is the appeal of, let's just say that, you know, nobody really wanted the job and Woody just went with familiarity and he hires Rex. What is the appeal if they do draft a quarterback to have him work with a Rex Ryan staff?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, it would be like, you know, the Yankees taking Volpe or the Mets taking Vientos and having him work out with the bullpen coach. Like,
true.
You got to get something that's going to transfer to their job. So I it's just really, there's a couple of Band-Aids out there. We'll continue to explore them. But my greatest fear, at least for the short term, is that it's a veteran retread and they want to roll it back with Rodgers. And, you know, we talk about Aaron's lack of mobility, though. It's come back a little, I won't be fair, but what I've never seen from Rodgers. Now, I haven't watched every snap of Aaron Rodgers, but I mean, yeah, I've watched every playoff game he's ever been in. I've watched every big 425 game that he's been on his entire, you know, his whole life, whether it's against the Niners or the Cowboys or whomever, right? And I've never seen him miss so many throws, like whether it's Garrett going here and the ball's here. His placement is alarmingly bad. And I don't even necessarily mean bad for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it's just kind of bad. And I don't know if that's attributable. I don't know what it's most attributable to. Is it that he just doesn't want to feel the hits anymore? And by the way, can I really blame him at the age of 40 when he just had your Achilles roll up like a lampshade? Not really. I know his knee is jacked up and the hammy's barking. I get that. Those bones get a little more brittle. Understood. But that doesn't mean he's got to remain the quarterback. So is he just getting rid of the ball early to brace himself for the hit? Is he not seeing things? Is it a combination of both? Is the O-line awful? I mean, it's not good. Is it awful? I mean, it's kind of bad. So I'm sure it's part of that too. And then the lack of chemistry with Adams is just, it's indescribable. Like, you thought that when Adams came and the first game that he played, I'm like, oh man, it's back shoulder time. It is chemistry time. It is, you know, Jedi to Jedi time. And it looks like they never even had a conversation, these two, right?
Yeah, no, it's insane. And it's every time he misses a throw and either overthrows it or underthrows it or throws it not anywhere near the guy, every time they cut back to him like shaking his head.
I know.
Is he angry at the receiver? Is he angry at himself? I don't understand, because it's every time it seems like there's a miscommunication or there's something going on, because they cut back to him every time.
Yeah.
And it's never just like, up, you know, bad throw, bad run.
Well, whatever. Here's what you've never seen. My bad. I've never seen once, literally, when I see all other quarterbacks do it, you miss a throw. Hey, my bad. I've never seen his thumb go to his chest once.
Yeah.
Not once. And that's what a leader, the leaders don't, this, like, how many times did they go to commercial break, right? And yeah, they've got the slow motion of Rodgers, and he's just like the, like, slowly looking up to the heavens in disgust. And it's a good point, because I've thought the same thing. I thought that early in the year. I'm like, is he mad at himself for missing that? Or Is that him showing, you know, disdain for his guys not doing the right thing? And I think it's the latter. I think that in his own crazy mind, and I was a massive Rodgers fan. I don't want to just shit on the guy all the time. He was an amazing player. I get it. He's getting old. He's not the same dude. Okay. But the lack of accountability is a real turnoff. And to answer you directly, I think it's him wondering what the hell his guys are doing rather than the other way around. Yeah. I really do.
It's crazy.
I do. I really do. I swear to God, I do. Oh, man. Oh, man. Woody Johnson. Yeah, I haven't heard back yet on the attempt to get him on the pod here. You think we get him on?
I hope so. I mean,
yo, listen. If I ran the Jets, well, I mean, Woody owns it, but whoever he trusts the most, right, in the organization, and I believe it's Jaime, I would probably go in that direction. Maybe it's somebody else. I know his family is very involved. Whomever it is that he would listen to a little bit, they've got to say to, hey, dad, hey, boss, whomever, you gotta do some talking here. And hell, I would love it to be on WFAN with me and Sal. I would love for it to be here on the pod, Unkillable, wherever it is. I mean, as much as I want it, and I believe that I would do the best job, right? I really do, because I think I would really represent most what Jet fans need to know, and I'd push him respectfully, and I would want to do it. But even if it was somewhere else, I would respect it. Like, you've got to go out there. You've got to be accountable. You can't just hide behind another, you know, hiring and firing cycle and more draft bullshit and that ridiculous conference call that he had when, you know, hey, Hassan Reddick, come on, man, get in the car. Hello, buddy, we're waiting for you. One big happy family. We're calling Rodgers the Sunday night before he fires Robert Saleh, and then they're both like, nah, man, you know, we didn't talk about the coach. Come on, you can talk about the coach. I mean, it's just, it's PR 101. When things are bad, well, when things are a little unstable, I think the prudent play is to say nothing, okay? When things are great, don't gloat. Act like you've been there. When things are getting a little bumpy, like that first little sign of bumpiness, you know, solidarity, confidence, just project an unwavering, you know, belief that, hey, I believe in my team, we're good. I believe in the organization. But when things hit this level where you fire a coach and a GM in the same season before it's over, and there's myriad reports that Woody doesn't want Rodgers or Rodgers doesn't want Woody or what, and you know, Rodgers, you know, debunked that on McAfee show, like, you need to stabilize this. And I don't mean after like a game, like, I mean, right after the season. It's got to be long format. It's got to be uninterrupted, unfiltered, no nonsense, no ducking, no hiding. You got to answer questions, dude, because you've got the best sports fans in the country who are just continuously digging into their pocket and feeding you, feeding your bank more, parking, food, PSLs, jerseys, merch, Santa, you know, Hanukkah gifts. Like, it's just a nonstop. Everybody spends money on you. And I understand that when you root for a team, I do. As much as I'm getting worked up, I understand that it's not a contract that you sign with a team like, hey, I'm going to invest my heart and soul and I'm going to invest X amount of dollars and you must win. Like, it doesn't work that way, because if it did, we'd all have our contract and every team would win and it would be easy to be a sports fan. We're not dummies. We know that it's not like that, but there should be an unwritten contract that when it's this bad and it's this fucked up, that we know that, you know, or at least that we think that you have a clue that you're going to figure this out. And he just never projects that. And I get it. He's kind of like, in a lot of ways, I don't know if you ever heard of this author. You ever hear of J.D. Salinger? He's an old author.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
Road Catcher in the Rye. This is a book I had to read in high school. I don't know if they still make the kids read it. Great book, right? When you're reading like George Orwell and, you know, Animal Farm and 1984 and all those books that we had to read, that I would read like a week before I had to go back to school because I ignored it all summer. Then I had to devour like five books. Moby Dick, I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? And J.D. Salinger was a very, very much a recluse. He was an author who didn't like to be photographed. I think he lived up in New Hampshire. I might have that wrong, but like, he was just in a cabin, very rarely ventured out. Just wanted to pump out his material, his content, and get him on the shelves and just lay back and let people read his words. And that's great if you're an author. That's fine. That's great if you're a musician. That's fine. Because it's a different relationship and it's a different expectation. But when you're the owner, you can't hide. And I think it's my greatest hope, you know, just to start the healing process. Not that it's blind hope, but I tell you what, man, or blind faith, because I have very little in faith in Woody to ever do anything right. Big picture, big picture, sustainability. But at least if he took that route, I would respect it. And then I could get behind, I think, a little bit more of what he's trying to do, whatever he's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the only way to go about it, to like start rebuilding faith with your fans. Because at this point, you know, it's just like most fans are probably looking at it a similar way that you are, that it's like, all I hear from this guy is, hey, we hired a new coach. Hey, we're trying to do this. Hey, here's our new jerseys for next season. Hey, here's the link to buy season tickets. We never hear is like, hey, obviously we've had our troubles, but I'm getting the right guy in place to make it work. Instead, it's like, oh, well, I fired the guy who I basically was using as a puppet the last year, it seems like, based on these reports with Joe Douglas. And
then
it's like, all right, well, I don't care. You guys don't need to hear from me, even though I'm the one that was doing it.
I'm
staying in the background. So
I'm with you, man. By the way, how great did the field look today? Like that looked awesome. Cool. It looked awesome. And you just can't help but think, like, man, imagine sitting down today. It's right after the holidays. Oh my God. I ate way too much. I gotta jump. I gotta get after it this week a little bit. Wow.
Yeah.
After the holiday, or at least after Thanksgiving, you know, putting the trees up, you know, getting ready for the spirit, the lights, and you know, everything that this time of the year brings, and watching that game, right, with that feel, which did look awesome. And the uniforms, which did look awesome. And it's like, you know, Jets 35, Seattle 10, Jets bagged their 10th win, 9th win of the season. You know, it's just, it could have been awesome. Instead, we get this mess again. So here we are, my man. Here we are. Hey, by the way, as you can tell, I've got the great Lou Carnesecca shirt behind me. And I did a video tribute for Coach on Instagram. I'm going to talk a lot about him tomorrow on The Fan. I saw 99 years old, and I'll just say this about Coach here, because it's about the Jets, and many of you Jet fans or St. John's fans for sure. The those days, if you are old enough to have lived through the middle 80s, right, mid 80s, where the Big East was in a lot of ways bigger than the NBA. I know that sounds certainly in the Northeast with the Knicks. I don't mean the Celtics and the Lakers, but from a Knicks perspective, before Patrick went there, when he was still at Georgetown, when Chris was at St. John's, it was a ticket. The Knicks were the second team in town. They were the second team behind St. John's, with Mully and Walter Berry and Mark Jackson and Bill Wennington, all first round picks, Final Four. But aside from that, you know, his spirit was just, it's just awesome. One of a kind. There's never, I know that the way college sports has gone, there will never, ever be another Lou Carnesecca ever. So I'll continue to pay tribute to the great Louie when I'm doing the games with Mink. And, you know, certainly when they're in Queens, I'll look over for my spot on the broadcast booth with John. And I look behind the St. John's bench, and he would sit, you know, if I'm sitting here calling the game, and the across the court is the Johnny's bench, a little bit off to my left, right behind him was Louie and Coach Rutledge, Coach Mahoney, his lieutenants. And, you know, even up until, you know, last year he made a game or two, he was still fairly visible. They would still do a luncheon for Louie here and there and a golf outing, just the best. So, you know, it's not tragic because he was 99 and we should all be so lucky, but I know that the St. John's family is really hurting, and I would have loved to have, you know, met him once more or seen him once more, I should say. And rest in peace, Coach. You will be absolutely missed, and just know that New York loves you. New York loves you forever. New York's godfather of basketball, you know? It's that little guy, little Louie, little diminutive stature, absolute titan of sport, with an amazing heart, and an amazing sense of what's right and wrong in the world. So he's going to really be missed. All right. With that, not to end on a morbid note, but I'll do more. I'm trying to get Patino on the show tomorrow for the fans. So we'll see if that comes through. Reach out to Mully, see if we can get him on as well. But hey, listen, from a Jets perspective, is what it is. Keep on chugging, right? We'll fire up something during the week, either Wednesday or Thursday, and we will bring a guest on. All right, we will do that. I don't know who yet. I'm going to really think about this one. It's got to be one that's going to be real pertinent, really, really going to cut to the core of what we have to hit. I mean, you know, there's definitely some former Jets I could reach out to that would most likely come on. I need to know what's going on in the franchise. So there's a few people that I've got my eye on, and hopefully we'll make that happen. But enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'll catch you tomorrow at 10 on The Fan with Sal. And hey, 9 straight losing seasons, right? Go Jets. How lucky are we? We are the luckiest fans in football, aren't we? I'll see you guys soon. Catch you midweek. Bye-bye.